and you're listening to The Next Generation. This is www.freedomizerradio.com. Be back in a moment after a quick break.
Thank you for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio, where we have a 24/7 chat room where you can come and share what's going on in the world with people of like mind. Anything and everything against the New World Order. Dial 347-324-3704 to catch our live show. Beginning at 9 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Friday till midnight, and 9 to 9 on Saturday and Sunday. Take us to the beach. Take us to the park. Take us on a walk with the dog. Only on Freedomizer Radio.
The following is a public service announcement from Freedomizer Radio and People Against the NDAA.
New York State, one of the least free states in the country. Albany, capital of New York State, and might as well be a second Washington, D.C. On the 16th of September, 2013, the Albany Common Council, with the lead of Councilman Anton Konev, introduced the strongest resolution to block the detention provisions of the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act and the law of war in this country's history. This resolution says if the federal government were to come in, or the federal officials were to come in, Albany City Police would not allow them to violate the rights of the people of Albany. Go to Panda Unite, that's P-A-N-D-A, like a little fuzzy bear, pandaunite.org. On the front page, there is a press release about this resolution. Click where it says contact Albany Council now. Pick one of those numbers to call up. If you're outside the state, pick one of those numbers to call up. If you're inside the state, try to meet with these legislators. Try to lobby them while they're at their offices in the city hall and attend that meeting. These are regular people who have the chance to restore liberty to a city.
And that's good enough for me. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Saturdays. I love you, Miss Cookie. Join Cookie and
good
me
job
on See the Power in You.
Hey there, Freedomizers. This is JC from the Sports Lounge. Join us for 3 hours on Saturdays as we take a break from politics to discuss sports at freedomizerradio.com. Come and join us each Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
And we're back. You're listening to The Next Generation on Freedomizer Radio. If you'd like to call in, the number here is 347-324-3704. Tonight on the broadcast, the main focus is the shutdown and the impending debt ceiling debate. In preparing for what could be an economic Armageddon, many higher-ups in the United States government, including elected officials, are making plans as to what to do if no agreement can be come to about the debt ceiling. At this point, we are 10 days from defaulting on our debt. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew has said that by October 17th, the Treasury Department will have less money on hand than it needs to pay all of its bills. Leading to a default of the obligations set forth by the federal government. John Boehner has put forth the idea in a semi-serious way, probably more seriously than he'd like anyone to think, about doing debt prioritization, which ensures that bondholders would get paid first. Bondholders would mean, among other nations, China, but also Japan, Saudi Arabia, and a long list of others. And this would minimize the negative effects of a default. We would essentially go through this like we were in some kind of bankruptcy court. Pay the bondholders first, and everyone else can fight for the scraps that are left over. This, of course, would lower the United States' ability to borrow money, which at this point has become essential. In fact, it's impossible for the United States government at this point to operate in any capacity without borrowing a large percentage of its operating budget from other countries and by selling bonds that are not all too surprisingly decreasing in their reliability. Paying the bondholders would work in one sense, that it would keep powerful nations from coming after you for not paying your debts to them. But on the other hand, you could think about it like a household. If you don't have enough money to cover your obligations and there's no good way to reduce your obligations, you could pay your mortgage payment to keep your house. But you wouldn't be able to pay your utility bill, your car payment, credit card, whatever else you might have. And your credit rating is still going to go down the tubes, even if your mortgage is still current. And it would be virtually impossible to find people to loan you money, given the inability of the United States government to find ways to trim back, even in troubled times that we're in now. The decisions that would have to be made would get uglier and uglier were a default to occur, and there would be rising costs with the inability to borrow money. Both sides say they don't want a default. But every time we tiptoe closer to this line, it makes all the credit rating agencies a little shaky. And we look back to 2011, we didn't even have to default. We just had to threaten it. And we faced a credit downgrade. Now, facing a credit downgrade has made it even more expensive for the United States to borrow money to float its gargantuan budget that no one has the political will to do anything about. Members of the Tea Party, for all their, most of the members of the Tea Party, that is, for all their bluster about wanting to cut budgets, don't want to cut any entitlements and don't want to cut military spending. On the other hand, most of the Democrats only want to spend more money and wouldn't ever be able to get the modest increase in taxes that would be necessary even to keep the same deficit level with all the spending they'd want to add. Meanwhile, those who actually speak of lowering deficits, lowering expenditures, find themselves in a minority. Usually off in the corners of the Capitol, with few political allies, having been branded as against America's children or against America's military or against whatever special interest group that people who like money spent on them advocate for. All the congressional leaders speak often and with some convincing intent of saying that the United States will pay its debts on time and in full. But as we get closer and closer to the D-Day, it seems less and less likely. Now, there are some who don't believe it's too big of a deal. Tom Coburn says there won't be any kind of default if the debt ceiling stays. Speaking on CBS this morning, he said, "I would dispel a rumor that is going around that you hear on every newscast that if we don't raise the debt ceiling, we will default on our debt. We won't. We'll continue to pay our interest. We'll continue to redeem bonds, and we'll issue new bonds to replace those." So it's not entirely accurate, said the Oklahoma senator, saying that attention needed to be focused on long-term solvency of government programs. I agree with his general outlook on the deficit in government expenditures. But it's flawed in this way. It assumes that there would actually be buyers for these new bonds. And it rides on the assumption, which has been held for a long time without question, that buying into United States bonds is a low-risk, safe bet for an investment. Every time we creep closer to any kind of debt ceiling debacle, it becomes a lot less safe, a lot less of a sure thing. Would you invest in any kind of entity where they're preparing basically bankruptcy proceedings and promising you that you'll get paid first? That's already happening in a city called Detroit. I don't see anyone placing any kind of major investments based on guarantees from the Detroit government. Issuing new bonds isn't really going to help much of anything in our current situation. There's no way around it. You're going to have to raise the debt ceiling. And here has been the Republicans' most caustic and egregious error. And it's an error that not only changes the course of history, but also threatens our well-being in the future. I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and I'll be back to explain in a second. This is The Next Generation, and you're listening to the Freedomizer Radio Network.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
And we're back here listening to The Next Generation on Freedomizer Radio Network, www.freedomizerradio.com. The number to call in is 347-324-3704. And the debt ceiling and the shutdown are tied in this way. In an increasingly polarized America, where there are more safe seats in the Congress than there are contested seats, where bipartisan commissions are truly bipartisan, they make extremely safe partisan seats for both parties so that they don't have to spend as much money on elections, and so they don't have to fight each other. They basically divvy up the map in order to ensure a certain amount of power for themselves, and that so there's little chance of reform or any kind of third party inswing into a contested seat. When you don't have to worry about election, and especially when the when you don't have to worry about the general election, it keeps you from needing a compromise. And when you only worry about a primary from the extent of the wing of your party, instead of shuffling to the middle, like candidates would normally do in a general election, you stay on the wingtips in order to defeat your more rampantly ideological opposition and hold on to your seat. So, in a Congress where many of those elected representatives aren't going to hear from their constituents and have little threat of being ousted, for not trying to compromise, you have a situation in which both parties are going to hold their ground, trying to rile up their bases, trying to keep their bases' attention, either for the purposes of fundraising or to prove that they haven't gone soft. And nothing progresses. And sometimes an ideological opinion can get in the way of perpetuating your own ideology. And this is where the Republicans have screwed up. In insisting on a fight to defund Obamacare, something that has been legislated and passed, upheld by the nation's highest court, and then essentially reaffirmed with the re-election of Barack Obama, it may be unpopular as a whole, but you're not going to get rid of it. You're not going to defund it. Even if you had massive majorities of the American people supporting its overturn, you don't have the political power to do it. You're barely holding on to one house in the Congress. And in the previous 40 or so attempts to defund or eliminate it, the Senate has taken none of them up. And even if they were to, they'd be dead on arrival. They wouldn't make it past cloture. And if there was no cloture vote, they wouldn't pass. There's a Democratic majority that is going to uphold this law. Until Barack Obama is no longer president, and perhaps even after that, there is going to be an ACA. I think it's a bad idea. I think it's bad law. I think it's going to destroy healthcare in this country. It's going to reduce the number of doctors. It's going to make medicine unprofitable. Our system is going to start resembling the national health system in the UK, which is slowly working its way towards collapse. More on that later. But regardless of how bad it is still law. And it's not going anywhere. Now, there are fights that are worth having. a fight about our national debt, the budget deficit, what government should and shouldn't be doing, what kind of programs government is sponsoring. Those are all debates worth having. And there was an ample opportunity to gain just a smidgen of political capital and then have these fights. By essentially causing a government shutdown, the House Republicans have shot themselves in the foot in two ways. They're going to get massive political blame for the entire shutdown. And this isn't just the mainstream media talking, this is actual polls proving this from reputable sources. At the same time, they've blown whatever low amount of political capital they had left on something that doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter if the government shuts down. If you're a federal worker, it matters a little bit more. But eventually, it'll get started back up again. Everyone will get their back pay. Most of the government's operational during a government shutdown anyways. So it doesn't really matter. You're not going to gain any concessions on a CR. Nothing is really going to happen except the budget continuing on as it's gone on. The debt ceiling is a different matter altogether. As you can tell, the Democrats were more than happy to let the Republicans force their way into a shutdown, because they knew it would ultimately benefit them. Nobody, not even Tom Coburn when it really gets down to it, nobody wants to see the federal government default on its obligations. And if you're going to blow your political capital and look like a bunch of uncompromising jerks and ruin your chances to have a majority, you might as well get something out of it. That's what's happening right now with a government shutdown that has virtually no consequences. It's not going to save any money. It's not going to change any legislation. It's not going to change any kind of expenditure, either in manner or amount. It is a moot point that was a lost cause before it even happened. And because some special interest group out there is going to score this vote because it includes the Affordable Care Act, everyone's panties are in a bunch, and they don't want to be the one who budges towards compromise. There's your trouble right there. If you're in some deep crimson red district as a representative and you're afraid of angering your constituents, explain to them your strategy about getting actual cuts instead of standing up in principle against a law that isn't going anywhere. Even if there's a Republican landslide in the next presidential election, and that candidate is 100% dedicated. Hell, even if everyone decides this is a bad idea, everyone from Bernie Sanders to Rand Paul decides that Obamacare is a bad idea, and they don't want it anymore. Barack Obama's not going to give up his baby, his only crowning piece of legislation, the only moderate success of his presidency. He's not giving that up. So you're going to be waiting, even if there was consensus in Congress and amongst the public, to get rid of this law. It's not going anywhere till January of 2017. AKA forever from now. So you could have used that political capital, whatever smidgen you had left, on asking serious questions about what the role of federal government is and whether we want to raise the debt ceiling in order to pay for some of these unnecessary, duplicative, unconstitutional programs. Having that fight and being taken seriously is going to be a lot harder to do now. Just think of what could have been. There could have been a fight after a bipartisan compromise about the budget. The very next week, you could have started a robust debate about the spending levels and probably even gotten some concessions in exchange for your vote to raise the debt ceiling. Working on a path towards solvency and a balanced budget and a less bloated, less intrusive government. Instead, after this whole shutdown goes away, John Boehner's focus is going to shift from that loud minority in his caucus to the threat of losing his speakership because of a potential Democratic gain in an off year, at a time in a presidency when the opposition party should be gaining congressional seats, instead looking for a repeat of 1998, where the party in power actually gained seats. Because of that, John Boehner is going to be more focused on not upsetting the American public as a whole instead of appeasing the various Tea Party factions in his caucus. Now, these are groups that I agree with on some things, some factions more than others. But they are taking the wrong tact and the wrong path. And because the Democrats are pretty much going to get most of what they want on this debt ceiling deal, the Republicans have missed a big opportunity to make positive gains towards a balanced budget for our country. They've missed an opportunity to take debt off the backs of their children and grandchildren. They've missed out on a chance to reduce government spending they've missed out on a chance to be the rational side for once, instead of looking like the ideologues. I'm not saying that the debt ceiling fight would have been easy, or that names would have been called or grenades thrown. Some of these very same terms they're using now that Harry Reid is bestowing on his Republican colleagues. All those things might be being said still. Were we at the same date and time, sans government shutdown? A lot of the same rhetoric might be going on, but at least it would be gaining towards something. This is an opportunity that the Republicans will never have again. And their own lack of foresight, the inability to see 2 and 3 weeks ahead rather than just to the next day, that, for lack of a better word, poor political acumen, that will cost this country. Think of what could have been. You could have allied with some colleagues on the left and maybe tried to bring home troops from Afghanistan or Iraq or any number of the secret theaters that the mainstream media likes to pretend we aren't involved in. Places like Central Africa and Libya still. There could have been an argument about the EPA or the DEA, especially with mandatory minimums becoming less and less popular. You could have had arguments about the IRS and the GSA and all the scandal-ridden agencies. You could have gained political points, and you could have made dents in this massive budget. But no, you just had to fight Obamacare, which you could not slay, and you will not slay, just one last time. Anyone who's impressed by you doing that was much more impressed by something else you did. You didn't swing anyone with that decision. It's amazing what could have been. You could have turned the corner. On bipartisan bickering, simultaneously bringing down the debt in the long term. But you had to fight Obamacare. What could have been? We're going to take a quick break. This is The Next Generation on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again. As I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
The Weekend Vigilante Show with Sheila Zelinsky, breaking moron corruption.
This is a globally orchestrated meltdown to reshape the world into complete totalitarian global governance. Really, the end game here is Pope Minister Luciferian eugenics plan. Ask yourself, how is it that out-of-controlled megalomaniac rogues run things? Tyranny, fear-mongering, drones, geopolitical chaos, financial crises, mass censorship.
If you're planning, you've got to plan in a way to defeat the existing system.
Mindless minions, they're walking around in sort of a zombie-like trance.
What you do on corruption?
I know. I don't know. I just don't know what exactly.
I certainly did not know anything.
There was no knowledge here at the White House.
Do these guys know anything?
Tune into the Weekend Vigilante Show with Sheila Zelinsky. Thursday night, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Only here on Freedomizer Radio.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
Does the media ever deceive the public?
A white plane, a very big jet, was flying in an unusual pattern near the White House over Lafayette Park. Very slowly, it made one circle and then...
Are the media and their sources trustworthy?
New York State and New Jersey will get their first doses of the swine flu vaccine.
The H1N1 virus has made thousands of people across the country sick. Many have died. And some worry that it could grow into a full-blown pandemic.
Where does our mainstream media get their news? All this enjoyment is brought to you by all the things sweetened with NutraSweet.
There's a reason why we want to own these guns.
We're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this.
That was President Obama Friday suggesting it is now time to reopen the national debate on gun control.
The media tends to march in lockstep with the government.
Who is responsible when the media fabricates the news?
When the public is constantly fed messages that are potentially leading us into a war that may not be necessary, it's not fair to the American people, and it's not fair to journalism, because the truth isn't being told here. We found out that CNN International is actually making money from the Bahrain regime. They are a customer of Bahrain. Bahrain is paying CNN International to create content that shows Bahrain in a favorable light, to then air that content on CNN International.
Join us online at williamlewisfilms.com. That's williamlewisfilms.com.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and
the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to FreedomizerRadio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on FreedomizerRadio.com.
And we're back here listening to The Next Generation on Freedomizer Radio. 347-324-3704 is the number. www.freedomizerradio.com if you'd like to chat in the chat room there. I want to shift gears a little bit here to the Virginia gubernatorial race, as well as a few other races that are going on statewide. As far as the tickets go this year, they are pretty far apart on most of the issues. Virginia, in its infinite wisdom, has decided on the Republican side to nominate three candidates for the statewide races who seem to talk about liberty a lot, but at the same time, cheapen it when they become associated with it. Ken Cuccinelli, who organizers at a Liberty Political Action Conference, commonly known as LPAC, in 2012, had to drastically reduce the exclusivity factor and the ticket cost from a reception with keynote speaker Ken Cuccinelli, as many of the young, educated attendees had no patience or taste for Ken Cuccinelli's hardline social views that seem to be more in line with running the Christian Coalition than a state government. Unfortunately, the same could be said for the rest of the Republican ticket in Virginia. E.W. Jackson, having made several bids for higher office, finally got through. Most of the reason he got through into the lieutenant governor's nomination was the fact that Virginia held a convention for the Republican, rather, the Virginia GOP held a convention rather than a primary in order to be more pure. Their words, not mine. Now, the candidate there, E.W. Jackson, has somewhat accurately, not completely accurately, but somewhat accurately compared Planned Parenthood to the Ku Klux Klan, and has made some rather bizarre, offensive, and just idiotic comments. Everything from how perverted homosexuals are to how yoga was connected to Satanism. This is the problem with having someone who spews fire and brimstone from a pulpit every Sunday as a statewide candidate for public office. Everything you say in those scenarios will be used against you. And there's not much you can do to soften them once they've been said. Despite this fact, it is still a tight race. He is within the margin of error against Dr. Ralph Northam, a state senator who is the Democrats' nominee for lieutenant governor. Lieutenant Governor serves as little more than the equivalent of vice president, in which you're the head of the Senate in Virginia, and you usually a springboard into the governorship. Either that or a great way to get paid a lot of money for doing virtually nothing. For the attorney general spot, the one that Ken Cuccinelli, the gubernatorial candidate, is vacating, you have a centrist Democrat who is taking up the cause of the party's more left-wing big government lines in order to maintain continuity with the rest of the ticket. However, pro-business centrist Mark Herring is probably going to be the majority choice. He faces a man named Mark Obenshain, a senator from the Shenandoah Valley. He has yet another confluence of the Christian Coalition and Chamber of Commerce wings of the Republican Party. The wings that make it, you know, so electable and so enjoyable and really pro-liberty. It's funny how some of these guys define liberty. Liberty seems to be the liberty for them to impose their views on everybody else. Christian theocracy. If off the off chance one of those candidates would be listening or would hear this. You know, Christian theocracy and placing restrictions on certain members of society simply because some book tells you what to think and how you're going to legislate and act. That's not good policy, and it's not liberty. It's about the antithesis of liberty. Which is why, despite several misgivings I have about their mainstream party opponents, I and most of my liberty-minded colleagues in Virginia will not be casting votes for any of these Republican members, because these Republican candidates are on the wrong side of the Republican Party, on the wrong side of history. They make Edwin Meese-like campaigns against pornography. They make Pat Robertson-like accusations against homosexuals. They are completely out of touch with the younger generation and their changing demographics. As an example, Mark Obenshain, Republican nominee for the Attorney General, put forth legislation that would require a woman to report a miscarriage to the police lest she be guilty of murder. All three candidates stand against marriage equality. All three candidates stand against global warming research, which, regardless of your thoughts on it, it's not in the purview of anyone in public office to decide what should and shouldn't be researched. That's what they would call micromanagement or big government bureaucracy creating red tape. That's the opposite of what they say they stand for. It's really the opposite of what should be happening. The only thing really going for the Republican ticket at this point is that they have Terry McAuliffe on the Democratic side. The fact that one of the most slimy, dishonest, egotistical, cronyism-defending terrible to look at, terrible to listen to, know-nothing candidates. If you haven't figured it out already, I'm describing Terry McAuliffe here. The Republicans have the what should be the pure joy and relief of having him as their opponent. Also on the Republican side is history. Virginia has an extended streak of giving a middle finger to the White House the year after it has an electoral victory. For what I believe, and I'll have to check the numbers on this, for what I believe would be the ninth time in a row, if Ken Cuccinelli wins, it would be, I believe, the ninth time in a row in which the party opposite of that elected president the year before wins the governorship. It's been a consistent in Virginia elections for decades. In the 1980s, when there were three Republican presidents elected, there were also three consecutive Democrats elected for governor in Virginia. Likewise, in 1993 and 1997, following 92 and 96 wins by Bill Clinton for the presidency, two Republicans were elected to the governorship. So with Barack Obama's victory last year, the streak would continue if Ken Cuccinelli were to win. Despite pointless anecdotes being on their side and having a goldmine of a candidate to run against, somehow Ken Cuccinelli hasn't been able to pull it off. And I would venture to guess that a lot of his not being able to pull it off has to do with his radical social policies. If a Democrat can run against you and say with truth and accuracy that you're too involved in other people's lives, I mean, what could you say? You kind of have a problem there. But when you have a candidate who talks about restrictions on birth control, when you have a candidate who talks about gay marriage like it's a natural disaster, when you have a governor who uses state funds to achieve personal policy goals, I mean, what can you say? That's the hill to climb if there ever was one. And it's all self-inflicted. Just the name and rattling off a few of his policies will send the uneducated voter who knows little of either candidate swinging towards the Democratic side, simply because of bad publicity, bad decisions, bad policies by A.G. Ken Cuccinelli. It is not a smart move in an increasingly liberty-oriented country to have such a candidate. I'm going to take a quick commercial break. This is Next Generation on Freedomizer Radio.
Bees work tirelessly to provide us with our food, but are struggling in the wild. In recent years, it's become apparent that bees, not just honeybees, are under threat and some species have already gone extinct. So, be friendly. check with your local nursery. Plant a bit of paradise for those who do so much.
I saw a little bumblebee. He came and said hello to me. Said, would I like some sweets for me?
You make a difference.
Whatever we can do to encourage people to support bees, I'm for.
I'm not a lab rat.
My family is not a bunch of lab rats.
I am not a lab rat.
Thanks, but no thanks.
80% of the processed food in America has been genetically modified.
That's GMOs. That's GMOs.
You can't even tell what foods contain GMOs at the grocery store.
Because no GMO food labels are required. That makes us the guinea pigs.
Sounds like an experiment to me.
GMOs are scary.
It's up to you.
You're an adult. You can vote.
I can't vote because I'm a kid.
Vote yes. Vote yes. Please vote yes. Santa Cookie.
Freedomizer, you have a voice.
How will you vote when initiatives are added to the ballot in your state?
Come listen to Ancient of Days, where we talk about the lies, misrepresentations, and holes in the history we learned in school. Mondays, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Freedomizer. Thank you.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where Freedomizers freedomize freedom.
And we're back here listening to The Next Generation on Freedomizer Radio, 347-324-3704. Speaking of voting, I've got John on the line here who would like to speak a little bit about it. John, you're on. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thanks for allowing me to come on. Voting has always been the main issue for me, and not a lot of people know, but in 2002, the Help America Vote Act was passed, and that basically flooded the country with $3.5 billion worth of electronic voting machines. And so, you know, by and large, we don't even really know who we're voting for anymore because there's no transparency anymore. In fact, there's been court cases. I think there was one in Tennessee. It was a very a district with a lot of black folks in it, and the white Republican won over the black Democrat, and the black Democrat said, "Well, you know, I'm finding it's hard to believe. I'd like to see the results of the election." And the judge said, "Sorry, that's proprietary information." So we have these private voting machine vendors that are running elections on proprietary source code, meaning, in essence, it's like saying, okay, hey, we got your votes. We're going to go back here and count them. We're going to come back out here and tell you who won. So, you know, if you don't have transparent elections, you can't have a free society because those two things are one and the same. And, of course, you know, the folks in Washington, D.C. do not want a free society. They, you know, want it as controlled as possible. So it was a number of years ago that I really zeroed in on the voting issue. In relation to that, I've also really focused on a clause that's in the Constitution, and it's a clause that there's a bunch of misinformation and disinformation and a lot of irrational fear surrounding it, and that is the Convention Clause of Article 5 of the Constitution. And basically, if you're a politician, and I've talked to a lot of them in my days, you say, hey, well, why don't we just hold a federal convention? You know, it's also known as a quote-unquote constitutional convention. And everyone was, oh, no, that's dangerous. That opens up the Constitution to being rewritten. But when you examine the issue closely, you realize that a convention is simply a public discussion about what we might propose as an amendment. And whatever is discussed at a convention, the proposals still have to come back to us, the people. And to get an idea or a proposed amendment to become a law, you have to have 3/4 of the people agree to it. And a lot of people overlook this 3/4 supermajority. And what that is, the 3/4 requisite or an idea to become a law, it's a principle. And the principle is that nothing's going anywhere that's partisan. If it's a strictly partisan issue, like banning same-sex marriage or, you know, basically the traditional issues for America, wedge issues, have to do with sex or violence. It's usually sex or guns. In the 1920s, the anti-polygamists were real big, and they were running around beating the drum. Today, the defense of marriage folks are running around scaring everyone. But those are partisan issues. And they could never achieve a 75% approval. In fact, there's very few things in any society that can achieve a 75% approval by the people of that society. So the fears surrounding an Article 5 convention are totally irrational. They have no basis in reality. Because if this truly is government of, by, and for the people, and anything coming out of a convention comes back to us, the people, to decide, then in essence, this is how we were meant to operate. When things start going wrong, when the Congress, I mean, you know, most people know that Congress is, you know, had as low as 9% approval rating, and that's something that's been trending for a decade now. You know, when the people, when 90% of the people disapprove of the institution set up to represent them, then clearly it's time for the people to exercise their ultimate right, and that right is found in the Declaration of Independence. That's the right to alter and abolish a government that's no longer working for you. And that right is embodied in Article 5 of the Constitution. And, you know, you're going to find very few people that want to abolish the government we have. You know, and there really is no reason to. We really do have a very fine government, a very fine structure. But there are plenty of people that would like to that would like to alter how it currently operates. And so, one of the things we put together, some folks and I that have been working on this Article 5 issue, is we've been talking about it for 12 years. I've been at it myself for 12 years. And I've seen a lot of people come and go. A lot of people say, oh, no, it's dangerous, can't do that. And so what the situation is currently, we have a situation where it's kind of close to the old theater adage of you must show people, you can't tell them. Or, you know, the maxim that action speaks louder than words. So what we've done is we've secured 3 days in the Capitol building in Sacramento, California. And it's December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. It's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in December. And if anyone can make it there, we would love to have you there. And what we want you to do is simply stand in for the real thing. We want you to stand in for an actual Article 5 convention delegate, and all you'll be doing, you won't be there to reinvent the wheel. You're not there to discuss how to write a new constitution. You're just there to engage in discussion and debate with other Americans about what amendment proposals have a chance of being ratified today. That's all you have to do. And then we think that if we document that, that will be the picture to speak 1,000 words. Because we've, as I've said, we've had people talking about the idea of a convention for years now. In fact, this one political commentator, he's a right-wing guy named Mark Levin, he's got a book out right now that he's plugging, and there's people lining up around the block to go to his book signings and stuff. And he's saying, hey, we need to have an Article 5 convention. So our fear is that this will continue to happen. This issue of an Article 5 convention will simply smolder on the fringes until it's too late to do anything. So we figure that to get it off the pages of Facebook or the internet and into the minds of Americans about what this thing actually is, then we'll have a good chance of creating the political will to coerce Congress to issue the call.
Well, I think that is actually a really great idea, and I think that could have a lot of potential if it was properly explained to people and it was presented more as a potential for positive alteration rather than radical overhaul.
Yeah, because that's really all it is. It is not radical. And, in fact, the ratification process and that principle of three-quarters required, mm-hmm. a radical overhaul is impossible. You're never going to get 75% of the people to agree to a radical overhaul. I mean, today I would think, most people say there's too much money in politics. I mean, I've heard my folks, my grandparents, I've heard people my whole life saying there's too much money in politics. And so I think something that would have a shot of getting ratified would be an amendment that removes private money from public elections. There really is no reason whatsoever to have private money in a public election if it's for the public. Our elections should be publicly funded. In fact, if we did remove private money from public elections, our elected officials would become public servants because they wouldn't be looking to someone to chase down for money for their next campaign. They'd be looking at their constituents saying, they'd be saying, well, how do you want me to vote? Because I want to come back here. I want you to vote for me again. So on this issue or that issue, how do you want me to vote? And I will. And, you know, so it would create that type of political dynamic. But going back to what you said, yeah, the radical overhaul will not happen. There's a lot of common sense amendments that have been proposed over the years. And the politicians just, you know, create a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors and get us all distracted from, you know, these really common sense solutions. But the documentary, Convention Sacramento, really, this gives, you know, if you really are concerned for the state of governance today, and, you know, all of history teaches us where things are going. I mean, there's an inevitable conclusion of what's going on now. And so if you really, you know, I know it's, you know, it's a little bit of a expenditure to get on a plane and go to Sacramento and put yourself up for two nights. But this would be, I think, a very meaningful experience for anyone who's still politically active and concerned. And I would imagine it would be an experience of a lifetime. You know, to be in a room with 150 Americans and you guys, you know, all finding out what the consensus is, because that's actually what a convention is, operating on parliamentary procedure. You're talking about a consensus machine is basically what it is. You put a whole bunch of people in a room, you get a parliamentarian. And it's kind of a slow, deliberative process. It's, you know, it's nothing terribly exciting, It can be at points, but it's a slow process. But at the end of the day, or at the end of the convention, you will have ideas on the table that two-thirds or more of the delegates would deem sufficient to be put to the people. And when you say, you know, just being informing people, because there's a lot of people that have no idea that we have a convention clause in Article 5. And I would imagine that you get together a whole bunch of concerned Americans. There's going to be poignant moments. There's going to be some humor in there. And all those things, and, you know, maybe some side bits, you know, of people talking in the hallway after the day's convention, all of that kind of stuff. I think you would have plenty of content to put together an hour-and-a-half documentary that, like I said, would take this issue out of academia, out of the ivory towers, out of the politicos who you know, run around saying it's dangerous. And it would just show people to say, hey, look, we have this available to us. It is actually there specifically, you know, for what we're experiencing today. And, you know, to my mind, we got to do something. I don't know how long you've had the radio show, but, you know, there are a lot of people concerned right now what's going on, and they don't know what to do. They're stumbling over the need to do something, and all they can do is post stuff to Facebook or, you know. So this is, you know, this has been a long, you know, this idea of Convention Sacramento has been in the works basically for a long time, but it just kind of came to fruition when we found out that you could actually secure a room in the Capitol building. So it would be awesome if you know, you yourself could come out, or if you can get maybe a couple of your listeners. I don't know what your listenership is, but anyone who's looking to really come to the aid of the Constitution, this is it, because this is really coming to do something to show everyone else that what the Constitution provides for is not dangerous at all, and in fact it's there for where we are right now.
I think that's absolutely great that you're making such a valiant attempt, and a lot of people, if they do show up or plan something similar in their state or even on the local level,
absolutely,
they're going to see basically how much power they have if they just don't accept no for an answer as far as being told what they can and can't do. Don't give in to cheap offers of become part of the hierarchy. A lot of politicians will basically, what they want to do is they want to get you out of their office. So if they could create, it was like, oh, we'll make you head of this, you know, citizens commission on subject X, which you're concerned about. A lot of power hungry, naive people will hear that, their ears will perk up. They think they're going to get in charge of something and make some big change, and nothing will ever come of any of their efforts. So basically, staying on a message, ignoring their politicians' threats, bribes, promises, and sticking to their guns until they get a definitive answer on an issue will really serve everybody well.
And you just mentioned something that I was remiss in, is that if you go to the conventionsacramento.org, that's the site that's set up. This is something that's taken place in California, but this is something that can take place in any state, in any community. I mean, you could go to your local city college and get a political science professor to sign on to the idea and hold a mock convention at your local city college. I mean, all it does is it brings people together, and it allows them to find the common ground. So it's a feel good type of event. And it's so that's really great that you mentioned that it, you know, you don't have to make it out to California, you know, this is something you can take this idea and do it anywhere.
Absolutely, and I would hope that anyone who's listening to this right now and really wants to make a difference, take the initiative or work something out with me, call in. We can make plans on this show for what can be done in different jurisdictions. Because I feel like people who don't realize how much power they can have if they actually put the effort into it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Yeah, there are a lot of factors going against you and anyone else who tries to make a difference. But they've been overcome before with a lot more entrenched systems. Think of something like slavery or civil rights. Anything whose time has come, it's going to happen. But there need to be those people pushing. How many reforms or advances in society haven't happened or won't happen because there wasn't that human effort pushing the stone up the hill, going through the hard work, going through the failures and the shortcomings, and pushing it along. When people are able to see the process and see that they can make a difference, even if they don't succeed at first, it's empowering, and it breaks down the idea that government is this big nebulous institution that you cannot access.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when you really examine what a convention is, and people say, well, most people say, well, we don't even know, you know, who chooses the delegates and blah, 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 all this stuff. All those issues are already established based on existing federal and state laws. So there's no unanswered questions about a convention. In fact, one of the main ones is, you know, well, if we ever hold an Article 5 convention, who are going to be the delegates? And the answer to that comes from the Constitution itself. There's, you know, equal protection under the law. That's one of the constitutional principles we have here in this country. And so if a member of Congress has to suffer an election to attain the power to propose an amendment to the Constitution, the only other person that can propose an amendment is an Article 5 convention delegate. So that means equal protection. They also have to be elected by the people of their state. And so the process, the constitutional process of electing delegates to an Article 5 convention, I mean, that in and of itself is going to take us out of the country we're living in right now and put us into an entirely different country. I mean, of course, it will still be the United States of America, but it won't be the status quo politics as usual anymore. In fact, if you can, try and imagine if you're a corrupt politician. Right now, you know, there's no end in sight to how you can line your pockets or, you know, benefit from your position. But imagine walking out the door tomorrow morning and hearing that America's getting ready to dust off the Constitution and take it for a spin. And you are immediately going to start walking and talking differently. So what the convention call, just the convention call itself does, literally overnight changes the political dynamic. And then from there, in the natural progression of events, of electing the delegates, and the delegates, you know, the difference between a member of Congress running and a delegate running is that a member of Congress, they all say the same thing. They say, hey, elect me, and it's time for change in Washington. We need change in Washington. I mean, I hear that every election cycle. I've been hearing it for 30 years. But an election for a delegate to a convention, they're going to be talking about specific amendment language that they want proposed if they become a delegate. So they're going to be platforming on stuff like a balanced budget amendment or term limits, or my favorite is, you know, removing private money from public elections. And so the delegates will actually be vetted by the people of their state before they even get to a convention. But by that time, people like my senator, Dianne Feinstein, and others they will be affected by this process, and we will watch them start to suddenly make sense again, because they'll know that the gig's up. So this.
Absolutely agree with you. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I'm almost out of time here, John. I thank you for calling in and talking about all this, and please keep us updated. I think it's really important what you're doing out there in California and talking about getting this started in other places. I think it's vital for the survival of our democracy and the Republic of the United States. It's really important what you're doing, and I appreciate and thank you for doing it. Call us back next Monday, same time, and we'll keep working on this. Real quickly, as an update to Insurgency Against the Machine, Robert Sarvis, Libertarian candidate for the governorship of Virginia, is at the edge of inclusion to be featured in the next debate. And if he is featured, he has promised to make it a firestorm. This is Next Generation on Freedomizer Radio. I'll see y'all next week.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Oh, you want to heal the world? Oh, you can't do that. You know, you got to elect the right people. No, change your thinking. Change the way you feel. Change the way you do things. Do everything for peace. Like John Lennon said, walk for peace. You take a shower for peace. Do whatever you do for peace.
Every time you do that, you set a ripple effect out.
Because we live in a vibrational world, and your brain is the instrument. To learn how to direct and control your mind, you guys are superheroes. You know, they don't want you to know that, but you are. You guys are the most powerful people in the world.
We see the power in you to change your thinking. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, only on Freedomizer Radio.